according to Mr. Brown. That is, I guess, a point to just say that for effective law enforcement, we need to concentrate our resources where there's evidence of effectiveness. And I realize this is new and it's just getting started and presumably might have better success in the future, but I think we need to keep in mind that not all crimes are committed by repeat offenders, and this is not going to be something that's going to solve all the problems. Madam Speaker, we cannot run law enforcement by what we see on television. Because people see things on television, they may get the impression that the success of this type of technique is more than it actually is. But, Madam Speaker, I do recognize that DNA has many useful purposes, that it is an important tool for law enforcement, but we have to decide where does it fit in the list of priorities, and if we're ever going to get our budget under control, Madam Speaker, we've got to start making hard choices. The fiscal notes on this bill for $56,000 a year significantly understate the cost of this program that we're embarking on in this legislation. I believe we're going to spend at least $1 million or more within a few years on it if we move forward to make it into a useful database. We're going to authorize it today when the cost seems small, but I feel confident that that cost is going to grow because many of the major elements necessary to bring this to fruition are not included in the cost estimates shown in the fiscal note. And just to mention a few of those, that'd be the personnel, the lab and computer needs, and the typing, which is going to be significantly more than the estimates we've heard. Madam Speaker, besides those problems, there's also the risk of misuse of these techniques that might result in problems for innocent people. And another issue that comes up here is what is the reference population against which we're going to calculate this probability that one chosen individual will not have the same DNA pattern as someone else. DNA profile matching is based on statistical probability. And that's whether the odds are that any two individuals would have the same gene markers. And there are many issues about how that's done, but this becomes a particular concern with ethnic populations. The odds for mismatching in the American population as a whole might not be that great, but as the population reference size gets smaller and smaller, it does become more of a concern. So instead of maybe a 1 in a million in a small ethnic population, maybe those odds would be more like 1 in 100. And there is possible misuse issues to consider, and whether we want to have those kinds of odds as something that's relied on. Madam Speaker, in addition, as I mentioned the other day during the debate on the amendments, there is the issue of our privacy and our civil liberties, and whenever we're talking about taking bodily fluids from people, we do have the possibility of an invasion of privacy. And I want to again thank the sponsor of the bill for including several provisions that attempt to draw a line around what will be done with this information. But, Madam Speaker, I fear that in spite of our best efforts to define it, government will find other uses for this information, and I think Amendment Number 6 the other day really demonstrates that point. Establishment of paternity is certainly another area where something like this might come into play, and maybe that's a good idea. But I guess the point is we can expect to see over time an expansion of the use of this information. Madam Speaker, in King County, Washington, when this question came up of whether they should start a DNA typing database, they had a citizens committee look into it, and the citizens committee came back and said, pointed out that the proponents had not demonstrated what the benefits of this expensive new technology would be. and they recommended that research be done to determine whether this would actually help and whether it was cost effective. And Madam Speaker, I think that given the state of all of the uncertainty surrounding DNA and its uses, there is not an urgency to starting this program. We would be better served if we did look into it in greater detail. In the last few days, I've had the opportunity to review the new law passed by the state of New York. They have extensive provisions for determining exactly how this is all going to work. They are setting up provisions for licensing of forensic labs and have acknowledged in their law the many problems that are developing in the forensic testing arena. They've also set up a process to get technical standards established and taken a number of other actions that I hope, assuming this passes, that the sponsor and the other body would take into account. I think that, you know, we've started to address some of those concerns, but this legislation, I don't believe, has adequately looked into the scope of things that need to be addressed. And although I do have some ambivalence about it, I'm going to vote no.
Further debate? Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I too in the beginning was ambivalent. I did spend a lot of time with the sponsor and in committee. My decision in the end was to vote yes, and it's because the bottom line for me was that is it okay to take blood samples for DNA purposes from convicted violent felons and sex felons? And to me, the answer was yes. But I do share many of the concerns of the previous speaker. My major concern, and I hope we will keep this in mind as this moves forward, is that well, it's especially ironic today with the unfunded mandates being another matter on our calendar. We have it's very easy to pass legislation, and it's very tough to fund it. And one thing for certain is the law enforcement entities in our state at this point are not going to be able to set up and run this kind of program and administer it into the future, including all the typing activities that are going to occur. Out of their existing budgets. They, you know, have not said to us that this is more important than things they're already doing and they're willing to toss those out to put it in. We are going to have to provide additional funding. I support that additional funding, and I hope we will remember that when budget time comes. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. You know, I think this technique has a lot of obvious merits, and I'm certainly not speaking against the use of DNA, but I just would like to ask the question, in the examples, and I assume that the sponsor is going to wrap up and talk about these things, in the examples that he gave, I don't know the terminology for these circumstances, but it seems to me that in the specific examples that he gave, that most of that the existence of a data bank would not materially aid the identification, that the samples could be taken after the fact, and I guess my question is, isn't it true that in most cases that would be the case, that the circumstances would be such that the samples could be taken after the fact, and that the data bank, while it may be convenient, wouldn't be necessary? So I guess the gist of my question is, what would be the percentage of cases that would be solvable only with the existence of the data bank? And so it gets to the question of what really is the cost effectiveness of the data bank. Now, I'm not speaking at all against the ability of the police to use this technique. I think it's clearly a valid technique. We need to explore it, keep it moving along. The question really is, how cost-effective is the data bank, and so what are the percentage of cases where that would be the only way that you could identify the criminal? Or, on the other side, establish the innocence of someone. Thank you.
Further debate? Representative Parnell.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to wrap up by just responding to a few of the comments that have been made. my good friend from Sitka raised some concerns on the floor today that were raised previously. One, this having to do with why the bill only takes blood samples from those convicted after January 1, 96, and why it does not take samples from the current prison population. Currently, taking a blood sample, under the bill, taking a blood sample would become part of the sentence of the newly convicted people. In order to say that we are adding a condition to somebody's sentence who is already in prison, in my mind, has some legal ramifications that we have not yet been able to adequately address. I am open to that as this bill works through the other body, and we'll continue to look at that issue. Secondly, with respect to costs, it was argued here that, and it was questioned here, is this the highest, and it has been used before, is this the highest and best use of these funds, $56,000 or more, as the case may be, 2 to 3 years from now? I don't think that's the appropriate question, because this is not the last $56,000 that the state has. If it was the last $56,000 the state had, we would be asking, is this the highest and best use? The question is this a good use of these funds? And yes, these funds will compete against the other priorities within public safety and within the other departments. However, one thing that has not been mentioned here is, or one thing that has not been addressed by the speakers previous to me, is the savings that is inherent in using a DNA databank. If you get a hit within the databank early on in a crime, you're going to save tremendous hours of troopers' time and police time by using the databank. Now let's look at what the costs of the databank are, because those have been discussed 2 days ago and today. The fiscal notes reflect $56,000. That is the cost of taking samples from 600 violent felons a year and storing them. That's not typing the samples. That will be done in 1.5 to 3 years. Typing the samples, according to the testimony, will cost $50 to $75 per sample, which is an extra $40,000 to $50,000 3 years from now. Oregon has one person that coordinates their DNA databank and does the work in their lab, and their databank is 4 to 5 times larger than this databank will be, as I understand it. So we're not talking a huge amount of money. 2 days ago, we heard floor debate that DNA typing can cost $1,500 a sample. That's true if you do the sampling that is necessary in a complex murder trial like the trial we see on TV. We have to pay those costs today for murder trials where DNA sampling is critical and is used. So this is not a new expense being brought forward by this bill. To make the databank usable, to make it adequate according to both the FBI and the crime lab, is going to cost $50 to $75 per sample. Another issue was raised regarding the privacy of the prisoners. That's a legal issue that's been debated for a number of years. We have a Superior Court judge who says that the felons have given up their right to privacy, and it's to some extent, you know, they have, when courts have said around the country that visual body cavity searches of prisoners is fine. Taking a blood sample as part of their medical exam when they come into prisons, to me, represents an intrusion, definitely, but it represents a minimal intrusion compared to the benefits that can be gained from the system. As far as the representative from Fairbanks who asked whether I had numbers on the percentage of cases where this is the only way that an identification can be made, I don't. I only have illustrations from where it has been the only means available. Because oftentimes there are no witnesses to these crimes and the evidence is relatively scanty. There were some comments were made about how far we were reaching in comparison to the other states by including violent felons. My information is different than the previous speaker. There are a number of states who extend the taking of DNA samples beyond sex offenders, and those states include Hawaii, Iowa, Florida, Missouri, North Carolina, Oregon, Washington, and Virginia takes blood samples from all felons, not just violent felons, violent felons convicted of crimes against persons. So I think it is time that we direct public safety to get going and using this emerging technology. I urge your support of HB 27. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, for giving me the privilege of the floor a second time to continue this debate on the issue of cost. And I believe the record shows that although we have heard testimony about this cost of $50 to $75, $50 to $80, somewhere in there, that will not provide the kind of the level of discrimination and usefulness that would be of much good. And I read the testimony to say we're not going to do that. We are going to either hope that the cost comes down or look at some more discriminating method. Again, according to Mr. Brown, the FBI CODIS director, the average cost to do sample typing at this time is about $130. And that would be to just get it the minimum that you need to get it into a database. And I don't recall having brought up the $1,500 myself, but we did talk about it in committee. And that is the number that is what you're going to spend on a case-by-case basis. And I recognize we're not going to do that for all of these, but it's just to say that the cost that's been given here is dramatically understated.
Further debate? If not, are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt Finance Committee substitute, House Bill 27, amended House? Would all members please proceed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
33 yeas, 1 nay.
And so, Finance Committee substitute, House Bill 27, amended House, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call for the passage of House Bill 27 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Gary Davis.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to move up the calendar introduction of guests.
Without objection, we are under introduction of guests.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Pradovich Gallery, you have a constituent, friend, neighbor from beautiful downtown Soldotna, Mr. Dennis Murray.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Continuing under the introduction of guests, I have a constituent and a friend, mother of a former student of my wife in the Pradovich Gallery, Mrs. Matthews and Mrs. Lipinski.
Representative Kelly.
Under introductions of guests, I'd like to recognize a couple of Fairbanksans who are down visiting Juneau, Wendell Schiffler in the Pradovich Gallery, as well as Keith Hilliard from the University of Alaska.
Further guests for introduction? Representative Brown?
I'd like to give notice of reconsideration of my vote on House Bill 27.
Notice of reconsideration has been given. This brings us back into the daily calendar. Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that reconsideration on House Bill 27 be taken up at this time.
There is objection. Will the House please stand at ease? L. To order. Representative Bundy.
Under introduction of guests.
We are under introduction of guests.
I believe, I'm not sure whether it's the minority leader or my learned friend from Sitka, but it's one of those southeastern communities. You know, after a while they start to look alike. But a former college mate, roommate and a very good friend, longtime friend, Ingemar. Where did he? Oh, he ran. Oh, there he is. Dick Lundahl. And right on.
Yeah. Further guests for introduction? Brief at ease. the House please come back to order? Motion before us is to take up reconsideration of Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 27 at this time. Mr. Minority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd recommend members vote no. I don't believe there's any urgency in this issue, and would remind members it takes a 27-member vote to do it.
Are you ready for the question? Shall reconsideration be taken up at this time? Members, please proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
19 yeas, 12 nays.
And so reconsideration at this time has failed. It'll be in front of us on Monday. Would the clerk please read the next item on the calendar?
By Senators Pierce, Green, Halford, and Taylor, establishing February 12th through the 18th as Peaceful Solutions Week. I have no amendments on my desk.
Waited all day for that. Would the House please stand at ease? We're under debate. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 7. Is there debate? Representative Toohey.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I don't know that I really would like to talk on this after the comments from the Speaker. But, Madam Speaker, I'm really alarmed at the trend of youth in Alaska resorting to violence and a violent methods to deal with problems and challenges that we're facing. I'm sure this concern is shared by other members of this body. Before us today is a resolution declaring the week of February 12th through 18th as Peaceful Solution Week. Designating this week is one way to get the message out that violent solutions are not acceptable and that violent acts can be confronted and prevented to help our school districts, school boards, principals, teachers, parents, and most importantly, our students. I urge all of you to support this resolution before us. And I would also like to give this body the information that several of us here in this body last night finished a personal safety course where we had the command and now have the command of several weapons of protection with the concealed weapons bill, which is the reason probably there is a connection between this and our certificates. Thank you very much.
Mr. Representative Navarre.
Madam Speaker, in light of that pronouncement, I'd like to have this resolution apply to the legislature and extend to the end of the session.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In light of the fact that the member from District 13 will now be packing a concealed weapon, I definitely will be in voting in favor of this amendment.
Representative Hanley.
I didn't see any minutes because I don't think it had any hearings. And as the representative from District 2 often points out about these types of resolutions creating weeks, they talk about violence and vandalism in our schools and a campaign to promote safe schools. And the resolve is to increase safety awareness. And the peaceful solutions part, there's a whereas it would be appropriate during the week of Valentine's Day. I mean, I don't see the connection, actually, unless it's peace and love. And that's not meant to be a joke, necessarily. I don't see the connection there between Peaceful Solutions Week. And I don't know if there's some national campaign going on that I'm not aware of. And I don't mean to insinuate that this isn't important. But I think the resolution speaks to it talks about promoting safe schools and safe communities and working together to increase safety awareness in our schools and communities. There isn't an awful lot of talk about peaceful solutions. They do talk about inappropriate behavior or problem behavior can be redirected. I don't think the resolution's written very well if the intent is to get to peaceful solutions. And some of the connections that are made here don't make a lot of sense to me.
Further debate? The question before us is, shall the House adopt Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 7? Will the members please proceed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
Yeas 30, nays 2.
And so the House has adopted Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 7. Would the clerk please read the next item on the calendar? Still packing, Mama.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 7 by Senators Taylor, Halford, Kelly, Sharp, Turgeson, Green, Pierce, Lehman, Frank, Miller, Representatives Grusendorf, Navarre, James, Green, and G. Davis, relating to mandates imposed on the states by the federal government. The State Affairs Committee considered the resolution, recommends it be replaced with House CS for Senate Joint Resolution 7 State Affairs with the same title, recommending do pass James Porter, Green, Ogun, no recommendation, Ivan Robinson, and Willis. The report was signed by James Chairman. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the State Affairs Committee substitute for SJR 7 be substituted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the State Affairs Committee substitute will be adopted in lieu of the original bill. Madam Clerk, do you have amendments?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Joint Resolution Number 7 be engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Would the clerk please read the bill or the resolution for the third and final time?
House CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 7, State Affairs by the House State Affairs Committee, relating to mandates imposed on the states by the federal government.
Is there debate?
Madam Speaker,
Representative James.
I would like to rise to draw attention to the body of the importance of this resolution. This resolution was started in the West by Colorado, this thought of sovereignty of the states and claiming the 10th Amendment for sovereignty, and it has taken wildfire, and the people in this state have been very vocal about this issue. I think this is a very good resolution. It is a good message to send to our people in Washington, D.C., that the 10th Amendment does specifically state that the federal government is only to do those things that it is allowed to do in the Constitution and has not been prohibited by this Constitution for the states to do, and they have been greatly expanding those issues to the detriment of the ability of the states to be able to survive. And I would urge everyone to support this resolution.
Further debate, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. We hear a lot about unfunded mandates, and generally I agree with the concept. I'm just wondering, are there specific things that we're referring to in this resolution? What examples could people point out to me for my information that would be things we would feel are beyond the constitutionally delegated power of the federal government in our state at this time? Are there specific things we're trying to address, or are we just making a philosophical statement?
Representative James?
Yes, I'd like to respond to that, because that is one of the biggest responses that we've heard, is that what does this say? Are we just making a message, or what are we doing? And the response that was given to that, because it doesn't have any effect of law, the response that was given to that very capably by Senator Charles Duke of Colorado, who won passage of the first resolution, says that, and I quote, our Declaration of Independence has no force of law. This is a message. This is a strong message. I believe that the people in Congress are getting the message, but we need to give it to them a little bit stronger. And yes, we're saying this is enough, and if enough, they don't hear enough is enough, we'll take the next step. And that's basically what we're saying.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall State Affairs Committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 7 pass the House? All members, please proceed to vote. Could the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
33 yeas, 0 nays.
And so, State Affairs Committee substitute at Senate Joint Resolution Number 7 has unanimously passed the House. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
We have citations on the calendar.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that citations on today's calendar be adopted.
Without objection, the citations on today's calendar are adopted. Is there any unfinished business? Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to withdraw House Bill 68, an act relating to primary election nominees for state executives and legislative offices. And my purpose in doing this, another member has a bill that is very similar to this and has already been scheduled for a hearing, so I ask that I be allowed to withdraw my bill.
Without objection, House Bill 68 is withdrawn. Further unfinished business, Mr. Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that we be allowed to waive House Bill 135, an act relating to student loans, from the House Finance Committee. Members have been asked, members of the committee have been asked about that, and well, it's my understanding anyway. Maybe we can have a brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Will the House please come back to order? Representative Hanley.
Right. At this time, I'd like to withdraw that motion, and then I'll check with everyone to make sure everyone was checked with. There appears to be some miscommunication, and then if it's appropriate, we'll do it later.
Thank you. Further unfinished business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the following representatives be excused from a call of the House for the following dates. Representative Phillips from 6:55 p.m. Plain Time Friday, February 10th, until 8:48 p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 12th. Representative Davies from 6:55 a.m. Plain Time Saturday, February 11th, until 8:48 p.m. Plain Time Tuesday, February 14th. Representatives Toohey, Representative Veazey, and Representative Barnes from 10 o'clock a.m. Plain Time Thursday, February 16th, until 10 o'clock p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 19th. Representative Williams from 10:10 a.m. Plain Time Thursday, February 16th, until 10:06 p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 19th. Representative Roachberg from 6:30 a.m. Plain Time Thursday, February 16th, until 8:48 p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 19th. And Representative Green from 10:10 a.m. Plain Time Friday, February 17th, until 6:16 p.m. Plain Time Saturday, February 18th.
Without objection, those members will be excused. Mr. Minority Leader.
Yeah, since everybody will be out of town, Madam Speaker, I move that I be left in charge of everything.
You wish. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I do move that and ask unanimous consent that Representative Gary Davis, who was previously excused from the call of the House, has asked to amend his return time to 9:29 a.m. Thursday, February 16th.
Without objection? Representative Davis will be excused. Any further unfinished business? Do we have any committee announcements? Representative Porter.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Judiciary Committee will meet in 26 minutes in the Judiciary Committee room to hear HB 39 and HB 4, authority to pronounce death and permanent fund dividend eligibility. And just a reminder to the members who have been taking firearms courses that the law that we passed dealing with that permit precludes their being carried in state buildings.
Further committee announcements. Do we have any general announcements? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. A majority caucus today at 3 p.m.
Representative Bundy.
Under general announcements, today is the first day of the Anchorage Fur Rendezvous Festival. For those that can only experience by long distance, I encourage you to follow the events and see the last true dog race in Alaska, the World Championship, as opposed to the camping trip that many of you often think of. In any case, brought to you from great distance, at tremendous expense, is the current Fur Rendezvous pin, and with your permission, I'll present that.
Thank you very much. It's under $100, isn't it?
Yes.
Thank you. Further announcements. This brings us to special orders. Do we have special orders? If not, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the House.
Madam Speaker, I ask for permission to speak on a letter I have in hand on the tug escorts in the Cook Inlet.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Very briefly, I have a letter here. I'd like everybody to have a chance to look it over, and if they're in agreement to sign this. This is a statement against a potential federal regulation which would require escort vessels for tankers in the Cook Inlet area, something that I believe that we should let the federal government know that we don't think we need more intrusive regulation, particularly as it relates to the oil industry in Cook Inlet, which is struggling in and of itself. Thank you.
Further special orders? Now, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the House stand adjournment until 11 o'clock a.m. Monday morning, February 13th.
We are adjourned until 11 a.m. Monday morning.